The opinions voiced on this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor prior to investing. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Jenios Wealth Management Incorporated, a member of FINRA SIPC.
You've heard of bull markets. You've probably heard of bear markets. Have you ever heard of an ostrich market? Probably not. We're going to talk about that today. It's what really matters. We start now. And welcome to What Really Matters. This is Peter McClellan, your host. And I am, as so often, joined by Jeff Hyback. We used to call this Sunshine Friday, but we're changing things up. Jeff has a brand new upgraded website. It's worthy of the stuff he writes. It's semtradersblog.com. And you definitely want to check it out because it's just, wow, it's very, very good. Anyway, Jeff, we'll throw this out to you since you bring these topics to bear. Most people know, well, sometimes they get confused. People that really aren't that attuned, they'll say, you know, which one's the bear, which one's the bull, I forget. Most people know, though, what the difference is between a bear market and a bull market, at least in a sense of which direction the market's going or their account balances are going. What's an ostrich market? Tell us what you perceive to be the ostrich market. And again, great stuff to read on his semtradersblog.com. So, Jeff, tell us what you got going.
You know, thank you. That's I'd like to take credit for it, but it's actually my 18-year-old daughter, Courtney, that redid my website for me. And, you know, sometimes these kids know a little bit more than their parents. So, but going back to, you know, the leading question, an ostrich market, you know, kind of came about because I was thinking at, you know, as we looked at what was happening in the markets, we, you know, kind of started to see some things that investors tend to be ignoring. And, you know, I've never actually seen an ostrich with its head in the sand, but that's kind of the analogy I was using is, you know, investors figure if we don't see it coming, then we're safe. And I started off just looking at, and as often happens when you read anything from John Malden, who writes Thoughts from the Frontline. I fell behind in my reading. He does a weekly email that, you know, he sends, and I was 3 weeks behind, which meant I had, you know, triple the amount of negativity because he's a very big picture thinker. He's a great economist, and he points out some of the things, you know, to go with our theme for the podcast of what really matters. And he was looking at something we've touched on here and there, and that's the pension funds and some of the assumptions they're making and just the sheer size of those pensions and how unlikely they are to come anywhere close to the return assumptions they meant or they have priced in there, and then what the ramifications are for our economy, our markets, and everything else.
Now, let me stop you there because somebody who isn't familiar with the topic, you know, and maybe somebody who's in their 30s, 40s, early 50s, and they've heard of what pensions are because their parents may have had one, but they don't have a pension, so why should they care about Malden's article on pensions?
Yeah, well, there's, I mean, depending on if you count all the government pensions and everything else, we're talking, you know, $6 to $13 trillion worth of money that is supposed to be there for people's retirement. It's money they're counting on for retirement, but the issue, as we learned, you know, with, you know, Detroit and some counties in California and a lot of the automakers and other pensions, is they're not always guaranteed. And, you know, to read one of the quotes from John Malden, the bottom line is U.S. public service pensions are toast. And he said one of three constituencies gets nailed: the taxpayer, the current and or future pensioners, or the public services that they're actually offering. It's going to be all three of them.
All right, but so far, the person who doesn't have the pension is saying, all right, so some bureaucrats or some workers of government workers don't, you know, they might have to suffer a little bit less, get a little less income when they're retired. I don't have a pension, so I guess they got to do like the rest of us, and that's save. You know, they might have that calloused attitude. Where are we going wrong? You mentioned one thing I think might jump out at them is certainly their taxes might go up. What about their 401k plans?
Yeah, well, and this starts to factor into growth for our overall economy, as if the people that were counting on this money all of a sudden don't have it, spending is going to go down. Economic growth is going to decline, which usually that means the stock market's going to decline. And so that takes a hit to their 401ks as well. If there's a bailout by taxpayers to put money into these funds and taxes go up, that means your overall growth in your economy slows down. So that hits the stock market. It's big picture. And we're talking, we could be 10 years off from this being a big deal, but it's going to be a big deal.
Right. Right.
And I just did a call today with Ned Davis Research, and you know, I'm gonna maybe put out a petition there to have my sunshine nickname pulled from me and given to some of these other people, because man, I wanted to just, you know, go out there and jump off a cliff after listening this guy. But one thing we like about Ned Davis is they're all about the data. And he was talking about some of the pension issues, and then he took it, you know, into what he called the entitlement programs, which, you know, is Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and some of those other things. And, you know, just with the current assumptions, we're talking bankrupt entitlements by 2022. That's not that far off.
Oh, can they push it back a little bit? I mean, because I'd as a boomer, I'd like to get a few years of Social Security down the road, and before I leave you guys, you know, with nothing in the nest. I'm being facetious. I'm being
right.
Facetious.
And you know, right now, and that's what he said. You know, he said I'm an independent, which you know I like because I'm also an independent, and you know, other than the. Last week, the Republicans, and this week, the Democrats running over with their speeches, which then was on our TiVo recordings. I didn't watch it because it just makes me angry of all this rhetoric going on. But, you know, he said, you look at Trump's plans, you look at Hillary's plans, and doggone it, they're going to spend more money. They're not going to do anything to Social Security and Medicare. And already we're talking 9% of our federal budget is going to Social Security. In just 5 years, we're going to be looking at 12 to 15% of our budget is just going to Social Security and Medicare payments, because people forget they spent the trust fund. There isn't any money there.
Yeah.
They're living off of current employees and their contributions,
right,
as well as borrowing money to pay these benefits. There is no trust fund. And now either presidential candidate is going to spend more money. And he had a chart in his presentation, and I'm sure some of these are going to start entering the blog next week.
No doubt.
That just blows you away. And this is the Independent Congressional Budget Office's projections. This isn't, you know, some left-wing or right-wing projections. This is what the data says. We're talking about trillion-dollar deficits by the year 2020. Yikes. That's as bad of a deficit as we saw in 2009. Coming out of the recession when we had TARP and, you know, all the other social programs that the president did to try to get things going in our economy. And this is assuming we don't have a recession.
Now, wait a minute. I don't have the blog up at the moment, but when I read it this week, one of your charts seemed to, and you're talking about yields, and I won't make it too complicated for people who don't really look at fixed income or bonds or you know, have that much of an understanding, myself included. I'm not a bond trader, but tell us, Jeff, what are you seeing right now in bond yields that gives you some pause about what could be coming in the not too distant future?
Yeah, it's kind of the theme we've had on this show, and one thing, you know, as Courtney's, you know, helped me with the website, we're going back and trying to pull our most popular, almost turning into timeless articles. And the yield spread, looking at, we're going to be posting our most popular article ever, which is the pending forest fire. Mm-hmm. The bond traders, where they are trading treasury bonds, told us way before the 2008 crisis that something was brewing in the economy. So we look at the spread between the 10-year and the 2-year. And when it's declining, that's the bond traders being very pessimistic about the economy. And I think what was more interesting was the chart that I posted the day before that, that showed the delinquency rate of commercial and industrial loans versus the spread of high yield bonds. And typically, as delinquencies go up, you see high yield bond spreads go up, which means the prices are getting worse, and you know we're running into issues in the credit market. Well, for some reason, high yield bonds have not reacted the same way this time. And this goes back to that ostrich concept. Right now, you listen to traders and they're saying, oh, well, it's different this time. We got a healthier bond market. But delinquency rates on commercial loans are up 100% from a year ago.
That's not good.
100.
That's something's wrong here. That, now, what's that telling us about the economy right now?
Absolutely. It's telling us, you know, what we saw with the GDP number. Year-over-year growth rate came in around 1.2%.
Now, I got to ask you something.
Pathetic. What,
you say that ostriches put their head in the sand sort of as a way of saying to the, maybe to themselves, comforting themselves, if I don't see it, my enemy coming, I want, you know, there'll be no problem. No storms are going to get me if my head's in the sand. Now, that's ridiculous, of course, but I just wonder how they've survived. Couldn't one say, well, wait a minute now. Ostriches are still here. They haven't gone extinct. So is it really all that bad to occasionally put your head in the sand and forget about all these bigger storms on the horizon? Look, the market's still doing pretty good.
Yeah, I think if you're a really long-term investor, you know, in my situation, I plan on working at least another 30, 35 years. So I don't want to touch my IRA or my 401k or my Roth. That, you know, all this noise that we're talking about is most likely going to be solved. And it's not going to be one president or one political party. It's just going to be the fact that Americans are some of the most optimistic, forward-thinking people in the world. And,
right.
And I have no doubt in, you know, 30 years from now, we're going to figure out all these issues. And that's fine. Ignore them. But if you're somebody who is going to be taking money out of your account in the next 10 years, or somebody who's retiring in the next 10 years, that's really an issue. My dental hygienist was asking me, you know, as she has her hands in my mouth, asking me about what she should be doing with her money in the market, and she wants to retire in 10 years. I said, that's honestly, if you told me what should I do over the next 5 years, or what should I do over the next 15 to 30, that's an easy answer. It's this next 10 years that I don't have an easy answer right now, because you look at the valuations you're paying for the market and what that means for potential returns.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty weak.
Mm.
And you look at what typically happens when you get the valuations this high, and you combine that with an economic slowdown, and you get some pretty big losses in your portfolio. The question is, when does that happen? So if you're retiring in the next 10 years and you're trying to ignore all these problems, you're not going to survive. You have to be proactive and you have to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're already in the defensive portfolio and you're, you know, positioned in the right portfolio where your time horizon and your risk tolerance and your that ability you have to take risk
mm-hmm.
matches your portfolio,
right,
ignore it. You're going to be fine. But
right.
it's there's too many people I see look at the market and say, great, we're in a bull market. We've been able to ignore all these things. Coast is clear. It's not the case. We're going to run into a situation where all these long-term issues all of a sudden are now short-term issues because we've moved that far up the timeline.
Mm. Wow. Well, you know, I don't think it's only ostriches. I'm thinking back just to drive the point home. I don't know if you've ever done any boxing or kickboxing, but I have in the past. And one habit that I had to break myself of when I was doing this was blinking. Because when somebody would you'd try to block and you'd see a you know a punch or a kick coming at you, we have a tendency to flinch and close our eyes, and that's not good. And there's been some great pictures of famous boxers who are getting the sides of their face mushed, you know, like a punch, and you see the sweat flying off, and just, you know, it's kind of gruesome. But their eyes are still looking right at their opponent. They're not taking their eye off for a second. And yet, I think it does. The correlation is there. It makes sense to me. It's the same thing if you're falling down. You know, if you're riding a bicycle and you ran up, some reason your bike's falling over, you don't want to close your eyes. You want to see how to roll and get out of the situation the best you can, right? I mean, it's just, you know, don't close your eyes. It's not going to help you any. So,
yeah. But, and, you know, you could take that to driving or riding your bike. You know, you don't want to be looking down, you know, at the 5 feet, you want to be looking out to where you're going.
Exactly.
And I think that's what we're seeing with investors is,
yeah,
is they're too focused looking down and saying, well, I haven't hit a bump yet. Everything must be great. And then they're failing to look up at the horizon and see that they're about to go over a cliff. And
not a good idea. I'm
trying to not keep my nickname of Sunshine, but
oh, today you're earning it. Today you're earning it.
I blame all the people I'm reading, which it's the data. I mean, I hate it. I'm like I said, I'm very optimistic about the very long term future. I don't see how we get from here to there without some sort of pain, and that's what we're trying to avoid with our clients. That we're trying to get them in the right portfolio so they don't have to worry about it. You know, we want them to be able to not even watch the financial news, to not even have to worry about opening up their statement or checking it online every day, because they know they're in the right portfolio. And that's really the purpose of these podcasts is, you know, just like you said, what really matters. And, okay, you know, what really matters is the big picture. Are you in the right portfolio?
Right.
Are you in a position where if all these bad things happen, it's not a big deal to your current financial picture?
So this is a little bit discouraging for me from the standpoint that, let's say, there's a lot of people out there that are, say, between 5 to 10 years from retirement. And I'm probably one of them, though. I'll probably keep my hand in the business, but I think, yeah, probably 5 to 10. No, maybe 7 to 10. I don't know. I haven't decided yet, but it's coming. And yet, what you're saying, Jeff, is that it may not hit for a while yet, but inevitably, even if we have a which I don't think we will, a straight bull market for the next 10 years, you're saying at best we do 5% per year. That's at best. And then, you know, it really could be 3, and some might even say it could be less. But wow, that means we could do well for 10 years. And yet, if after 10 years the storm finally hits that you're talking about, what a time to retire. Talk to us about sequence of returns, because I know that's got to be a big part of what happens here, how it unfolds. For the guy or gal who retires into a bear market versus the guy or gal who lives 30 years in retirement and just before they die goes into a bear market, what's the difference?
Yeah, that's just it. I mean, we've looked at, and I don't know what the latest numbers are, but the last time I looked, we looked at, say, rolling 10-year returns, and something like 88% of those returns, where you just take every month and you say, well, what are the returns 10 years from now? And 88% of the time, those returns were positive. However, there's still that 12% of the time where you ended up with negative returns over that 10-year period. And the reason that matters is when you retire and all of a sudden you're no longer getting that paycheck and you're relying on your investments, that nest egg you built, to pay it, that means instead of dollar cost averaging in, you're now dollar cost averaging out. And so what we found is if you're taking out more than 3% of your portfolio, you're going to run into issues if you're in that 12% of the time where the next 10 years are negative.
Now, Jeff, that's pretty discouraging, because if you're going to depend on this 3%, holy cow, that you got to have a boatload of money. I mean, am I right? I mean, that's a lot of money, especially if you put some inflation to it.
It is. And I mean, we've talked about, you know, the pensions earlier and Social Security. And one reason it's such a big deal is not a lot of people have saved much for retirement. And, you know, that's where I think most people, you know, if they take anything from these podcasts, it's that you're going to have to take control of your own retirement. And for a lot of people, that means figuring out ways to cut costs now so that they can save more. And then that was something, you know, going back to my hygienist is, you know, she said, well, my financial advisor told me to pay cash for a car. I'd driven this other car for 16 years and had 220,000 miles on it. And it really hurt to write that $25,000 check when I could have just gotten a loan for it. I said, okay, well, let's assume your loan's probably on that is $400 to $500. You were essentially your bank on that. So now the only way this works out is if you write yourself a check into your IRA for $500 every month. She goes, that's exactly what my advisor told me. I said, well, what did you want me to tell you? To go spend that extra $500 you saved?
Right, right.
You know, that's where I think people are losing sight of things is, you know, you have to look at where you're spending your money because it's not so much what you make, it's how much you're spending that determines how well you're doing in retirement. And, you know, I know that's something you love to do. It's something I love to do is help those families figure out how can I retire comfortably? And a lot of times it's just sitting down and doing a budget and coming up with a plan to start saving more and spending less.
There you go.
And then that 3% doesn't seem like a lot because another thing her advisor told her was to downsize her house and to invest the difference there and still do a loan where she has no mortgage on the day she retires.
Nice.
And, you know, so freeing up all of that stuff is really what you can do so long as you've taken the time to look at where you're at, you know, risk tolerance, time horizon, make sure you're in that right portfolio. And I think that's, you know, one thing that we didn't talk about this before we started the new podcast, but I think it still deserves to encourage all of our listeners out there to invest in the conversation.
Absolutely. And I'd say do it soon.
You've been listening to What Really Matters with Peter McClellan, a chartered financial consultant with the 401k Latte Company in Lakeville, Minnesota. For a no-cost consultation or second opinion of financial issues, call us at 952-882-0400. That's 952-882-0400. Or visit us online at 401klatte.com. That's 401klatte.com. We want to remind you to invest in a conversation.